Good morning, Mendocino. This is Jeff Blankfort, welcoming you to the April 10th edition of Takes on the World, a public affairs program that comes your way the second and fourth Wednesdays of every month. Every other fifth Wednesday, when I open the phones to you, our listeners. It was 5 years ago yesterday, April 9th, 2008, that I spoke with Professor Linda Bilmes about the book, The $3 Trillion War, that she had co-written with fellow economist Joseph Stiglitz on the projected costs of the Iraq War. Today at about 20 minutes past the hour, Professor Bilmes will be back on Takes on the World discussing with me a working paper she has prepared for the John F. Kennedy School of Government at Harvard, where she teaches, entitled The Financial Legacy of Iraq and Afghanistan, How Wartime Spending Decisions Will Constrain Future National Security Budgets. Her report not only confirms the earlier projections she had made with Leo Stiglitz, it greatly exceeds them. By fortunate coincidence, I will be speaking with Professor Bilmes on the very day that President Obama has released his much-anticipated budget that calls for reductions in both Social Security and Medicare. Something has stunned his supporters, and I hope to get her comments on that. As for what Americans will pay and continue to pay for our government's wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, her forecast is numbing and becomes even more so when considering the increased tensions between Washington and its ally South Korea, with understandably paranoid North Korea, and a renewed yelping from Israel for not just the U.S. but the world to set a deadline for attacking Iran, now that the latest talks between Tehran and the P5+1 countries ended without Iran surrendering its right under the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty to enrich uranium. Both countries have several things in common. For one, Iran has not launched a war in 250 years. North Korea in 63, and questions still remain about whether they started that one back in June 1950. Neither country has anything resembling what we call democracy, yet neither has sent its troops to fight on foreign soil during the same period. Both have been suffering under sanctions imposed by the UN Security Council, under pressure from the United States, one because it has nuclear weapons, and the other because the U.S. and Israel believe that it is developing nuclear weapons. The hypocrisy of the U.S. in both instances is manifest and incontestable. Every year, the U.S. military and South Korea engage in joint military exercises near the North Korea border, which they just completed, but this year, in response to an earlier North Korean missile test, the U.S. flew two B-2 stealth bombers over the South and dropped two dummy bombs on a firing range on the island of Jeju-do off Gunsan, 214 miles from North Korea's capital, Pyongyang. The B-2 bombers are the most expensive aircraft in the world, costing U.S. taxpayers about $2 billion apiece. That's $2 billion apiece. They have conducted secret bombing runs over the Korean Peninsula before, but this is the first time their dry runs have been made public. What do we get besides the shaft for our $2 billion? Well, in addition to conventional warheads, the B-2s are equipped to launch B-61-11 tactical bunker buster bombs with nuclear warheads. This has caused the latest heir to the North Korean dynasty, Kim Jong-un, to get hopping mad and threaten missile attacks on U.S. bases in the region and the U.S. itself. This has, in turn, caused our new Defense and War Secretary, Chuck Hagel, to cancel a planned U.S. missile test from Vandenberg Air Force Base south of Santa Maria this week on the chances that it would further antagonize the North while revealing Washington's double standards. That's it's okay for the U.S. to launch missile tests, but not our adversaries. Meanwhile, South Korea's new president, Park Geun-hye, whose role model is the late Margaret Thatcher, has warned that if North Korea launches any kind of attack in the South, her generals have already been ordered to, quote, make a strong response without political considerations, end quote. What's interesting, if not necessarily reassuring, is that visitors to both countries report seeing the people on both sides of the 38th parallel that divides the North and South not particularly worried. Well, in the 60 years since the two sides stopped fighting, they've seen it all before. Let's hope they're right. I mentioned the new president of South Korea is an admirer of Margaret Thatcher, whose 11 years as British Prime Minister should have disproved the notion that women heads of state bring any more compassion and humanity to their position than men. It's something to remember when Hillary Clinton becomes a Democratic Party candidate for president in 2016. Over the weekend, NPR reported on two stories from Afghanistan. One dealt with the death by a car bomb of a 25-year-old American State Department official, Ann Smetanoff, who was killed along with three U.S. soldiers and another civilian when the car they were traveling in as part of a U.S. military convoy was reportedly rammed into by another vehicle laden with explosives. The other was a story that has now become all too familiar, that a NATO airstrike on a village in Shigal District in Kunar Province on the Pakistani border had killed at least 11 children and a woman on Saturday, and injured more than six others during an operation targeting two men alleged to be Taliban commanders who were also reportedly killed. Newspapers around the world carried a picture of their small bodies lying side by side. That picture, similar to others of dead Afghan children we have seen, was also all too familiar. On Monday, NPR mentioned only the tragic death of the young State Department employee who was said to be taking books to an Afghan village. The dead Afghani children had been forgotten, but not, I assure you, in Afghanistan. In Israel on Monday, it was Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day, and much of the country's Jews stood still for 2 minutes in memory of those who perished during the Nazi Holocaust. Traffic, schools, and workplaces came to a temporary halt as the official siren sounded nationwide at 10 a.m. Official ceremonies around the country started immediately afterward, and in the Knesset, the annual recitation of victims' names began an hour later from the podium. In Washington, President Obama issued a statement reflecting on his recent visit to Yad Vashem, Israel's National Holocaust Museum, and reaffirmed, quote, our collective responsibility to confront anti-Semitism, prejudice, and intolerance across the world. On this Yom HaShoah, he said, we must accept the full responsibility of remembrance as nations and as individuals, not simply to pledge, quote, unquote, never again, but to commit ourselves to the understanding, empathy, and compassion that is the foundation of peace and human dignity. Also in Washington, Democratic House Whip Marilyn Steny Hoyer, who has visited Israel 16 times while in office and is one of the leading recipients of funds from pro-Israel political action committees, used the occasion to, quote, reaffirm America's unwavering determination to prevent such a tragedy from ever taking place again. In a statement issued by his office, Hoyer said, quote, we stand side by side with the State of Israel in protection of its unassailable right to exist and in safety and the security of the Jewish people in their homeland and around the world, end quote. Curiously enough, this kind of attention to the Shoah has drawn criticism from a most unlikely source. Moshe Feiglin, an ultra-right wing member of the Likud party, a member of Prime Minister Netanyahu's cabinet, and the deputy Knesset speaker. In a statement that was reported in the Jerusalem Post on Monday, which I assure you will not be read or heard anywhere else in the United States, Feiglin said, quote, Israel must stop using the Holocaust to score political points and should no longer bring foreign leaders and dignitaries to the Yad Vashem Holocaust Memorial Museum, end quote. In comments he originally made at a conference Thursday at Shoham, an upscale Jewish town built on the ruins of the Palestinian village of Deir Tarif, and first revealed by the Israeli paper Ma'ariv, Feiglin had said that, quote, Israel has wrongly used the Holocaust as a tool to justify our existence and sovereignty here. They have made it as if we have to have a Jewish state because of the Holocaust, he told the Post. When the diplomats are brought to Yad Vashem, they are speechless. But giving only security reasons for being here does not work with new generations in Europe who care about rights. The other side's incorrect, that's according to Feiglin, the other side's incorrect arguments about the land being theirs are more persuasive than the pragmatic arguments about what would happen if there was no Jewish state. End quote. Feiglin insisted that, quote, the reason for the State of Israel, for our existence, is not security, but our national goal. But the Holocaust teaches us that we should always be strong, not only physically, but also morally, end quote. According to the Post, Feiglin also complained about the poor financial support Israeli governments have given Holocaust survivors over the past several decades. Feiglin is not the first Israeli to call for an end to the country's obsession with the Holocaust, but he is the first member of the country's right wing or government to do so. There's another event that happened 65 years ago on April 8th that you will not hear mentioned by any Israeli or American politician. I'm referring to the massacre of more than 100 Arab men, women, and children in Deir Yassin, a Palestinian village on the outskirts of Jerusalem that was carried out by the Irgun, a Jewish terrorist gang led by Menachem Begin, with the cooperation of the Haganah. After they had finished the killing, the members of the Irgun dragged the survivors through the streets of the holy city to demonstrate to the Palestinians what was in store for them if they did not flee their villages. That war crime took place 5 weeks before Israel declared its statehood and the Arab armies responded by attacking the new state. And of course, in 1977, Menachem Begin was elected Prime Minister of Israel. Fatima Radwan, who was 9 years old when the village was attacked, described what happened to her granddaughter. Quote, "Fathers, grandfathers, brothers, and sons were lined up against a wall and sprayed with bullets, execution style. Beloved teachers were savagely mutilated with knives. Mothers and sisters were taken hostage, and those who survived returned to find pools of blood filling the streets of the village and children stripped of their childhoods overnight." End quote. Ironically, Deir Yassin had been seen as a relatively peaceful village that offered no threat to the Jewish forces. The report of the attack and the parading of the survivors through Jerusalem stirred worldwide outrage, resulting in the perfunctory apologies from Jewish Zionist officials, but they were of no consequence. There would be other massacres with less publicity during the ethnic cleansing of Palestine, and Deir Yassin would end up being just one of more than 500 Palestinian villages wiped out to create Israel as a Jewish state. Well, on the subject, it isn't every day or night that a tax-exempt nonprofit takes in $27 million in the space of a few hours. When it happened at a gala attended by 1,400 people at New York's Waldorf Astoria, arguably the city's most famous hotel, it should be news, right? Wrong. Apparently, since not a single New York media outlet, TV or print saw fit to cover the annual dinner of the Friends of the Israel Defense Forces, or FIDF, this past March 12th. The FIDF is an organization that most Americans, including the majority of Jews who are not affiliated with the Jewish establishment, have probably never heard of, and that's probably the way those running the group apparently like it, especially given their motto, quote, "Their job is to look after Israel, ours is to look after them," end quote. That there was a total media blackout of the dinner in the world's leading media center is a testament to the power of the pro-Israel Jewish establishment. They didn't want the event covered, and so it wasn't. Since the millions this so-called charity raises are intended to benefit the soldiers of a foreign country, while hundreds of thousands of U.S. veterans, millions, are suffering the physical and mental after effects of the Iraq and Afghan wars, with more than half of them 56% already having applied for disability benefits. The very existence of the Friends of the Israel Defense Forces and its concern for the welfare of Israeli, not American soldiers would not go over well with most Americans if they heard about it, so they were denied the opportunity. It is also reasonable to believe that FIDF's fellow New Yorkers, who are confronting underfunded schools, low-paying jobs, or unemployment, and the increasing cost of medical care, would harbor legitimate resentments against those wealthy Jews who in a single night can come up with $27 million for the welfare of a foreign army. They might well imagine what that kind of money would do for their city, but those who control the media never gave them the chance. Vice President Joe Biden was tapped to deliver the keynote address at the Export-Import Bank Conference in Washington, D.C. last Friday, and he called for the creation of a new world order for improvement of the economy and international business relations. "The affirmative task we have now," said Biden, "is to create a new world order because the global order is changing again and the institutions of the world worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened and some need to be changed," end quote. Not quite the same meaning as when George Bush Sr. first said it on, September 11th, 1990? But not far off. Biden's comments were made even as the so-called BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, are planning to create a new monetary system to rival and perhaps surpass the West. While it received little U.S. media attention, last week at its fifth annual summit in South Africa, the BRICS group unveiled what it said was a new development bank aimed at breaking the monopoly held by Western-backed institutions. The bank would use $50 billion of seed capital, shared supposedly equally between Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, but would clearly be dominated by China, with South Africa, whose economy is not nearly on the level of the other four, likely to have the smallest input. Russian President Vladimir Putin gave support for the bank, while India's trade minister said BRICS will have a defining influence on the global order of this century. "It's done," said South African Finance Minister Pravin Gordhan last Tuesday, adding, quote, "We have made very good progress on the formation of a World Bank analog development agency." Finally, the apparent decision by President Obama to offer $112 billion in Social Security cuts over the next decade, which he did announce today, has stunned and infuriated many of his longtime supporters, who told us, quote, "Wait till his second term when he's no longer running for re-election and you'll see the real Obama." Well, some of us believe we saw the real Obama much earlier and are not surprised at anything he does. But others who believe in him, like former U.S. Labor Secretary Robert Reich, Senator Bernie Sanders, and MoveOn.org and the AFL-CIO, have been publicly calling on the president, who they worked so hard to elect and then re-elect, not to cut Social Security ever since news leaked that he plans to do it using a scheme called chain CPI, end quote. Reich has launched a petition through MoveOn.org and SignOn.org addressed to the president saying, "Mr. President, the chain CPI is a cut to Social Security benefits that would hurt seniors. It's an idea not befitting a Democratic president. If you want to reform Social Security, make the wealthy pay their fair share by lifting the cap on income subject to Social Security taxes," end quote. If you wish to add your name to Robert Reich's petition, go to MoveOn.org.